Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and a man who touched grass, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
I touched it with my knee, Windy.
With just the one knee?
Yes, just the one knee. That's right. That's, right.
That's amazing that you couldn't remember of it. I mean, presumably...
The knee just confused me.
Yeah. Okay, fair, me. Fair. So many congratulations to Nathan and Mariam on their engagement.
Thank you.
A very romantic gesture that you just described to us, Nathan.
I just quickly, like, asking someone to proposing on two knees is a very different to proposing on one knee. the whole kind of feelings, like Windy, when your time comes, don't go bad on two knees. That's almost, that's desperation.
The
yeah, the beg. Sorry.
Please. Amazing. Amazing. Lovely news. Very, very happy news. We are once again very proud to be partnered with 1882 Fanzine, a terrific new Spurs fanzine. Issue 2 has just come out. It's available worldwide. It's a lovely, small, transportable, well-made, nicely printed fanzine. You can get your copy at 1882fanzine.com, so 1882fanzine.com. We really like it. We've read both issues cover to cover. It's great stuff. There are some excellent Spurs writers in there. You'll know many of them. The design, as I mentioned, is very nice. It's a kind of topical but also nostalgic fanzine. So some of the pieces are kind of on point for now, but they're never going to be pieces that you won't want to go back to. They're things that are timeless. The issue 2 fanzine is named Leaving the Lane 5 years on, so it marks the 5 year anniversary of Spurs leaving White Hart Lane. There's some lovely articles, including Nathan, one from Spooky about Delhi.
It's classic Spooky prose, isn't it? Short, punchy sentences that really drive to the heart of the issue. Yeah, I mean, obviously the Delhi story is dear to my heart. I think often in sort of what you might find in fanzine pieces is like you get the prose, the really the nice writing that gets to the heart. But then sometimes because I'm a tactics nerd, I can struggle with it if I find that like the analysis is wrong is too shorthanded. Whereas Spooky, importantly for me, hits on what went wrong for Delhi,
yeah.
And why, and that matters to me because that means that it strikes into my heart very much. I don't know. I hope the Delhi story isn't over in the bigger feature. Basically, I don't think this is the end for him.
I hope not. If you missed the first issue of the fanzine, which came out late last year, you can actually make a small saving by getting the issue 1 and 2 bundle. That is available only in the UK or for people who live in the UK, but you can still buy issues 1 and 2 separately if you live abroad. All the details are on the website. So the first issue was about Spurs cult heroes. It featured Alistair Gold on Roman Pavlyuchenko, Dan Kilpatrick on Eric Lamella. Dan loves Eric so much. I really admire that. And many more besides. So once again, you can buy the fanzine from 1882fanzine.com. That's 1882fanzine.com. And for updates on their future issues, you can follow them on Twitter at 1882fanzine. I also wanted to say a big congratulations to Chris Summersell and his partner Katie on the birth of their little boy, who they have named Sonny, the perfect Coy's name. He's absolutely adorable, and Chris has adorned him with a Spurs scarf already, which is which is obviously a sign of things to come.
Congratulations, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Congrats.
So good news all round this week. This is a happy podcast. We can talk transfers again because there's been a little bit of movement. Unusually for Spurs, things are happening early. The links are getting stronger. And I guess the place to start is Bastoni, because that's the rumour that's been gathering weight and getting everyone very excited. It's kind of ebbed and flowed. It seemed like Spurs were really up for this signing, and then it kind of went quiet because it seemed like Bastoni perhaps wanted to stay at Inter. And now it appears that maybe Inter need the money and are willing to let their highly popular player leave.
Yeah, so this has kind of been the thing, right? They had to sell Lukaku and Hakimi before, which led to Conte leaving and eventually going to Spurs. And then it seemed like, oh, they're going to sell everyone, but then it was a bit calmer than that. They got those two sales over the line, and then they could spend a little bit. And now they're sort of returning to kind of a similar situation. So it's not like they're like completely on fire. They've got to sell everyone, but they need to sort of be turning over quite a bit of profit year on year at the moment. And so if they want to bring players in, they've got to let players go. And they do have, again, I've come to the podcast not remembering his name. They do have a backup to Bastoni, and they do maybe fancy themselves to land Bremer. Bastoni is like a boyhood Inter fan, and he's living and playing in this city, and he's young, and he's got no real reason to leave in a rush, and Inter just won the title. But if he gets forced out, I don't know. I'll admit the power dynamic is complicated, right? But I guess that's what we're hoping on.
Exactly. And Bardi, I would say, from speaking to you over the last year to 18 months, I reckon this would be your absolute dream signing.
I think this would be a brilliant signing. When the I think him on the left and Romero on the right would be two incredible centre backs who are very front footed, can come and win the ball, but then can also gallivant upfield. I didn't watch the Finalissima because I don't care about Belotti, Bernardeschi, and the rest of those mugs that didn't get Italy to the World Cup. So I was really fascinated about the 10 changes he made for the Germany game and this kind of new era that should have started ages ago. So I watched that game and I was a bit concerned about, you know, Gnabry, Sane, Werner, not because Werner's very good, but he's very, really mobile. And to see how Bastoni got on, and he was brilliant. He was winning the ball. He was doing drag backs, nutmegs in the final third. He was composed. Italy played a ball out of defence. He got caught once, but Romero gets caught as well, doing those kind of passes into midfield. And sometimes it's more about the midfield not reading it or being in the right position. And it was a very kind of makeshift midfield from Italy. But he was brilliant. And he would be a fantastic signing, either as a left, as an option in the centre. And makes me sad that Ben Davies will be pushed out for Bastoni, because I think Ben Davies has been fabulous. But he'd be a great rotation option. And this transfer just makes so much sense. He's a fabulous, fabulous defender who could do pretty much everything. And he's one of those that, you know, 10 years ago would probably be a central midfielder, but these days is a centre-back.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't worry too much about Ben Davies, because I think there's going to be plenty of games to go around. And as Nathan's mentioned before, maybe Bastoni can play in the centre at times too, which means even more games for Davies. And he's Mr. Reliable. He's always there. He's always fit. He's always available. He's, you know, comes in and does a job. Doesn't need a run of games to get up to speed. So I think we'll still see plenty of Ben Davies, which I'm quite happy about. And Bastoni is a player with real pedigree. I noticed from doing a bit of research that he basically played at every single youth level for Italy. I think that's a good sign. I think, you know, if you've been spotted, it can work both ways. Sometimes players are spotted early and end up just getting in the youth teams because they're in the youth teams, because they're part of the in crowd. But with him, he's played significant games at every single youth level for Italy.
It's also a culture thing in Italy. You're not an adult until you're 23, 24. Without being stereotypical, you live at home with your la mamma until your mid-20s. That's just what happens. I've often criticised England for rushing players through too early. Like, Bellingham and the rest of them, Walcott, those guys, they should have been playing more youth football. So, yeah, that's why Italy was giving a load of debuts to 22, 23-year-olds, because they do spend all their time in the under-21s. And I just think that's good grounding for individuals and, yeah, as footballers.
Mm.
Yeah, Bastoni is barely old enough to make it into the international team, right? At 23, but he's also already like a title win, you know, contending Champions League worthy player for sure. At 23, he's you mentioned Werner's mobility, and for me, Bastoni, he's so mobile, he's so agile, his hips are like a salsa dancer, right? He's got the size and the physicality that you need as a centre back to have all of those kind of necessary imposing elements and ability in the air, but he's got the hips of a winger, and that does so much for him in offence and defence. I think
he started off as a fullback.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think it's a madness if the big teams around the world allow us to put Bastoni and Romero in the same back three. I just think it's a ridiculous situation. Man City should be all over this. Liverpool should be. I guess Van Dijk plays quite comfortably on the left, so maybe that's why. But I think it's, if they allow us to sign Bastoni and they've already allowed us to sign Romero, then it should be stopped, because that's how good I feel about this if it happens.
Alistair Gold wrote a piece about the already existing strong relationship between Bastoni and Perisic on the left-hand side, and the strength and understanding that they have.
Bardi, what's the most we should be willing to pay for Bastoni?
I think if you spend £50 million, you're getting a deal, because the sell-on will be 75-80 in 3 years' time, if that's where you want to go. He's 26 in 3 years' time, and that's still prime for a centre-back. So I think if we get anything under 45, it's a steal.
And up to 60?
I still think £60 million is a solid investment.
This is an €80 million defender for sure.
Yeah.
This is elite level. This is an elite level.
I didn't think that we were going to be able to afford him. When we were linked to him before, I said, no, that's like, he's out of our price range. But maybe because Inter in a situation where they need to sell, it's a different story.
I still think it doesn't make sense for him to... I still think City should be all over this. United, everybody should be looking at this. But hopefully the links... If he can see this as a continued developmental career move, and that's how it could be pitched to him, work with Conte, a couple of years with Conte, really develop, you're still really young, you've still got loads of time to do huge things in your career, then I think we can really sell it as a massive stepping stone for him. And then if he comes to us and we do great things, he doesn't need to move. Otherwise, he can get that move to wherever else he wants to go.
Bardi, did you know that there were two Italians in the Premier League at the moment? Just two?
Two.
No way.
Yeah. Jorginho and who's the next one? Can't remember.
Ogbonna.
Ogbonna, of course. Bloody.
Yeah. Yeah.
So not some just middling Italian jobber kicking around.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? So that was, that little factoid was from Ben Bernstein, who emailed us. He wondered whether there was something in that, like why might that be? Why are there only two Italians in the Premier League?
They're all staying in Serie A at the moment.
And they just don't travel. Well, there's if you look at the Italian national team, the world-class players aren't in Italy. Verratti and Donnarumma are at PSG. If Bastoni leaves, that's another world-class player. And then I just think it's kind of down to who else is at kind of elite world-class level at the moment. Barella, possibly. But then no one in their right mind would spend money on any of Italy's forwards, apart from Chiesa.
Chiesa, yeah.
It's interesting. And Ben's point was... about the wages, you know, Premier League tends to pay the highest wages in world football, potentially.
Plus, England's a long way away from their mum's cooking. like to be at home.
That could have something to do with it. So the other player that we've been continually linked with in the past few days is Jed Spence. Which I'm quite excited about, I must say. So Spence is someone we've been talking about on this podcast for well over a year now. We like him. He's been on Nathan's list and he's been off Nathan's list because he kind of got superseded by another wing back in the Championship. He's always been high on my list, I must say, since I first saw him play.
Yeah, I've been a little down on him, but I I got into it with Thiago the other night, and we argued it out, and he convinced me that yes, there's a lot of rawness there, but if Conte is the one who is guiding his decision making, then there's so much upside. So I still have some reservation. I'm not like all in, but the upside is huge. He's so fast. He's so not just fast, but fast on the ball, fast as a carrier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With quite a lot of guidance, I think he will need quite a lot of guidance. But the upside is definitely potentially enormous. And apparently all the reporting is that Conte himself is specifically excited once Jed Spence sees him and says, I can craft this into a remarkable player. So I can't really doubt him too much, can I?
No, I don't think you can. So Sam on the Discord made what I think is a really good point. He said that he'd been reading a lot of the criticisms of Spence, and they seemed to refer to things like decision-making, awareness, concentration. Mm-hmm. And his point was, well, with Conte's patterns, you kind of reduce the significance of those because they just happen. You know, you're so well trained in the art of the system that you don't really have decisions to make in the same way, so it kind of mitigates a lot of the potential problems. And I completely agree with that. I think, you know, for a player who's very good at expressing himself going forward, Conte is the ideal coach to get the best out of them defensively.
I think that's primarily where I am, but I also think that one of Spence's downsides is that he's brought his own patterns. He's brought his own, so his decisions are made in advance, not reacting to. So if he's about to receive the ball in an advanced area and then make a cross, he decides that before he receives the ball, and then he decides on which cross he's going to make, or he makes the cross based on how the ball's moving or whatever, instead of looking at where the players are, right? Instead of picking out an option. So, but again, I guess the point is, if it's a team-based pattern and Spence is, you know, if you're in this position, play it to the far post, and Harry Kane knows that that's the drill, so Harry Kane's at the far post, then there is matching up there. So, yeah, all right, okay, let's do it.
So I think he's actually got a little better at being, what's the word?
Aware?
Yeah, but yeah, exactly, adapting in the moment. I think that's an improvement he's made in the last season as he's become a better player, as he's become more confident, has more belief in his ability, and basically thinks he's the best player on the pitch. I mean, I think he does most of the time. When he's on the pitch now in the Championship, he thinks he's the best player on the pitch, probably because he is the best player on the pitch. And I think that's given him a lot more kind of gravitas in terms of being able to hold onto the ball a little longer and evaluate things. So my one criticism of him a year ago might have been that he was a bit of a one-trick pony, like the old kind of Aaron Lennon, suck his guy in and then quickly dart away, you know, shift the ball very quickly and dart away on the outside. He's much more skillful now, so he's got more tricks up his sleeve. He's trying all kinds of drag backs and crazy tricks. It's very fun to watch. I'm pretty excited about the potential Jed Spence signing. I completely understand the concern that some people have that Spence and Doherty might not be like the absolute top-notch right-hand side that we dream of when we've got, you know, Perisic on the other side. But I do think the upside of Spence is exciting enough to justify it. I think it's I think it's a pretty high upside signing. I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't be keen on another top level right wing back coming in. And if it's Joachim Mähler, then we've signed, that would be someone who can play either side, so that would suit nicely too. Let's get them all. Let's sign all the wing backs. We had some other news this week. So Spurs did their player update where they announced that Gallini's loan would be coming to an end. He would be leaving. Obviously a vibes goalkeeper, very obviously got on very well with other squad members and was good for morale, but wasn't much of a catcher.
Extremely popular, it seemed, for someone who was there such a short period of time. Everybody seemed to love him.
Absolutely. He seems like a really, really nice guy, to be fair. I watched several interviews with him where he just came across extremely, extremely well. So they obviously did the research on him as a character. Buried within that article was the information about which players had been released at the end of their contract. So lots of youth players being released. And we've been, I would say, unusually ruthless with our releasing of young players. And the suggestion is that Paratici was not impressed with the academy when he arrived at Spurs, that he thought the players were physically underdeveloped, and that might be a priority of his. So lots of the players who've just finished their scholarship have been released. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them at least have gone. That is an unusual number to cull. We've normally released 2 and maybe 3, and the rest would be kept on as sort of third year scholars or given professional contracts. I don't think there's any that we need to worry about too much. That I'm not worried about losses, big losses there necessarily.
Did Ronaldo leave?
Ronaldo Torraj, yeah. So he's an Albanian attacking. Oh, it's a great name, isn't it? We've unfortunately lost another great name as well. Dante Casanova has moved on. It's a superb name, and I was really hoping that he'd play for Spurs with that name, but alas, no. So aside from the scholars leaving, there are some slightly more well known players who were either on third year scholarships or professional contracts. So Janiel Bennett, who is the player who scored the first goal at the new stadium, he has left. I think he'll get a move for himself to potentially a League One club. He had a good loan move to Crewe. I think he'll be a decent pickup in League One. And the one that people are most upset about, I think, is Timothée Lotutala, who is our French under-19 goalkeeper. And I mean, I think the fact that he's the French under-19 keeper is what has got people worked up, because they think, well, if France have recognised him as a good goalkeeper, then, you know, why are we letting him go? But it's really difficult to know if he's any good, because he's not really played a great deal. He rotated heavily with Oluwayemi, who's also left, been released. And to be honest, Oluwayemi played more matches than Lotutala, so it's been quite difficult to kind of get a handle on whether he's any good, and I'm really bad at judging goalkeepers anyway, so I'm not like hugely worried about it, to be honest.
Speaking of French goalkeepers, Mike Maignan has replaced Lloris as France's number one, maybe. At least he's got, you know, he's taking games now, and I think rightly so. And we were linked to them before, and we should have been all in for him, but never mind.
I mean, that might be a good thing for us. You know, a bit less pressure on Lloris, a few less games for him.
Yeah, maybe a little less wear on the body. I mean, he's got his World Cup. What more do you want, you know?
Yeah.
As captain, eh?
Absolutely. Any other transfer business that you want to talk about?
Bale won't retire now. I guess that's the latest news for after the weekend. So Bale will continue for another season. And Spurs did their Instagram post congratulating our Welsh boys, and they pictured Bale in there. So you can read into it. My ITK sources have been investigating that.
Who has it been linked to in the last week?
Alan Saint-Maximin.
Oh yeah, what is that about? Why must we be linked with a winger every window?
Wendy's up for this though. Wendy's. I want Nathan to destroy him, and then Wendy to admit that he's all for this. So Nathan, destroy him.
Okay. First of all, we have to establish that he's a really good player. He's the dribbliest boy in the world, perhaps behind Adama, and that's great. But it also means that he's like an established Premier League name. He's Newcastle's, in my opinion, only second best player behind Guimaraes now, but their biggest star. So he'd cost a lot of money. Surely there is no basis for believing that he could play wing back. It would suit him, that he could pick up the defensive side of the game, that anything around that makes sense, that he would play either side, whatever. Therefore, he's only coming in as a forward, right? So you're looking, he's going to replace what, Bergwijn in the squad, or he's going to replace Lucas in the squad. But I really don't fancy him as a forward, right? He's a wide player. He's a touchline hugger. He's a traditional winger. He's not especially productive, but what he does do is draw and beat players with incredible skill. So he's going to cost a lot of money. He's not going to displace the front three at all. He's going to have to play backup, and he's not going to suit the role. Your turn, Windy.
No, I mean, it's really, really, really hard to disagree with any of that. I just really like watching him play. I really, really, he's really enjoy watching him play. Yeah.
No tactical insight should ever start with this sentence, but I was at a Jubilee party talking to a Newcastle fan, season ticket holder, who goes up, It's quite the commute. And he doesn't like him. He thinks he kills a lot of their attacks, slows down a lot of their attacks. And yes, he looks interesting and it looks like he's going to achieve something, but very little actually comes from it. And in the swift turnaround under Eddie Howe, he was one of their weaker performers. So he would absolutely be thrilled, not that they need the money, but if they sold him and we gave him a large chunk of money.
He the situation he suits best is being the megastar on a lower mid-table side. If he can be the guy who every attack, give the ball to him, give the ball to him, give the ball to him, and he gets usage and usage and usage, and just put up volumes of dribbles that eventually result sometimes in attacks via other players. But to come in and be sort of a bit part player, I don't think that suits him at all.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, as you said, at best, he comes in as a Bergwijn replacement, which is essentially a Lucas replacement in terms of the minutes for us, because Bergwijn barely got any time, so he'd be coming on as first change. He's an upgrade on Lucas, sure. He's, in my view, a fairly big upgrade on Lucas, but is that a priority? I mean, yes, sure, we want to upgrade. We want to sell Lucas, upgrade on Lucas, but for 40 million, it seems like not a great use of funds, to be quite honest. Or not the right player to replace Lucas with. We should be replacing Lucas with someone who can play up front or wide. I don't think St. Maximin can play up front.
We're going to need that depth up front next season, right? In a way, Bergwijn would be a useful player to have next season so that Sun can rest. But that's not going to happen because he's not happy after the season that's just gone. So we do need players there. I just don't think that you want to buy a £40 million Premier League star to take that role. Because the best way to achieve depth is to replace your first 11 with better players. So, for example, Lucas is moved out of the first 11 and onto the bench and becomes depth. You can't feasibly do that to our existing front three. You have to bring in someone who knows they're going to be second choice. So you've got to look at younger players, right? You've got to look at developing players for those positions, for that, well, not positions, but for those roles. Sir Maximin is a developed player, right? He's established, and he surely demands regular football.
I'd rather go after one of Palace's young players rather than St. Maximin.
Mm.
Elise is...
oh my goodness, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think I might have said this on the podcast before, but literally every club in the Premier League should be willing to sign Elise for anything up to 50 million. I think he's so good.
Yeah.
I would like to hear you guys take on the Gabriel Jesus rumours today.
Yeah, he's all right. It's good. Good player.
I mean, that does make slightly more sense because he can play up front and wide, but I don't love him. I don't love him. I think he needs a lot of chances. A lot of chances to score a goal. I think he's better wide than he is up front these days, to be quite honest. He's just sort of like a good player, but again, established Premier League player, high fee, high wages.
It's a different situation because he's not quite a starter, or is prospectively looking at not being a starter.
But then why would he leave City to be not a starter for another team that's slightly worse than City?
Yeah.
And the situation just doesn't work for either party, I don't think. What do you think of him, Bardi?
I don't mind him. I think he'd be pretty useful. But like you say, he doesn't have that kind of killer finishing instinct that Son has. He would be a little bit more wasteful. But I think he's a decent player. And I think he's in our quest for giving an alternative to Kane or someone that can play with Kane. I don't think it's a bad idea.
Deo would love to sign Gabriel Jesus. He loves him. Goes on about him all the time.
It also really annoy Arsenal fans who thought they were going to buy him as well.
Yeah, I mean, that is a good point. That is a reason to sign him.
I'm in favour. Yeah, I mean, he's a very good player. I don't know. I mean, it's a matter of talking to him and finding out if he's happy to be. Because, I don't know, if you're second choice behind both Kane and Son, which again is the Bergwijn situation and he's barely played at all. I don't know. I'm not sure now.
Yeah, I mean, we know there'll be more minutes up for grabs next year. Because there has to be. Kane can't play a Premier League and a Champions League game every week. He will break. Please assure me that he won't do that. Is Conte going to play Kane twice a week every week?
Yeah, I think there's a chance that...
Oh, God. He does. He is, isn't he? Yeah, I think he is. So moving on from transfers, we've got some questions, but before we do that, I just wanted to let our listeners know that the Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust has launched its 2022 fan survey. The Trust obviously encourages as many fans as possible to participate and share their views on the key issues affecting Spurs. And the findings will help inform the Trust's work for the coming year and provide an overview of the mood amongst the fan base on critical issues. Last time they ran this, over 8,500 fans took part, and they're looking to break the 10,000 barrier this time. The survey is open to members of the Trust, non-members, and both UK-based and overseas fans. You can access the survey via links on the Trust's website, thstofficial.com, or via their Twitter account, THST official. So get following them, make sure you complete the survey, have your say on all things Spurs, and support the Trust's positions for next year.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nathan, you dropped a cheeky Perisic vid for non-patrons.
Yeah, I'm making this up as I go along. I don't know whether I'm going to do that for every signing, or whether that's fobbing off the patrons, or because I've sort of had a little think about how I would do that for Bastoni, how I would do that for Spence, and I'm not sure. It always works in a neat little package. But it was quite fun to do. I was quite proud of it. I'm not always, sometimes I come away from my videos going, oh, I don't know. I quite like, this is like a neat little package. I really don't know.
It got 261 upvotes on Reddit.
Yay.
Pretty good going.
Yeah, but Reddit also loved Lucas. So I don't trust Reddit at all.
If we mention his name, which we do every episode, then the comments on Reddit will be about Lucas. I don't know. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
So let's do some questions. We've got plenty of them still. John Gordon says, The Guardian recently had a ranking of the best signings of the season based on who scored data. No surprise to see Kulusevski rank highly, no Romero, unfortunately, but he was curious to see Bentancur rank as number 7. He's not someone, this is John's words, he's not someone you've had much cool to talk about in recent months, with Romero, Kulusevski, Son and Kane rightly dominating the conversation. So what do you feel he's brought to the team since he's joined? So Bentancur has... He's come in and had an impact, I think. He's you know, at the time he came into the team, we were having to play Harry Winks in midfield because Skip was injured. So he was kind of like an essential upgrade at that point, a really, really useful upgrade on Winks, I think. Bardi, how do you think he settled in?
Before we start, just want to say on that list at number 6 is Jack Grealish. So I think we need to take a pinch of salt with that, even though I got no beef with who scored. I do like them. I think Bentancur rates so highly because he's been important for us. He's not like a game changer. He's not like you just invented a light bulb and all of a sudden he's just changed the world. He's that kind of light switch that he's the one that enables us to turn the light on, because without him we would have kind of muddled through this season with Harry Winks alongside Højbjerg, and I don't think we wouldn't have finished inside the top 4. So Bentancur has enabled us to be able to play a bit better, and I think that's where his impact has been so great. He hasn't perhaps delivered in terms of numbers and everything else, but his partnership with Højbjerg blossomed. Højbjerg had a great end to the season, started playing much better than I could imagine he ever could, and I think that's where the beauty of Bentancur is. He's just enabled everyone else to play a bit better, and he's taken us further than we would have been able to go without him.
He's kind of just come in and done a job, right? But what he's done is just sort of immediately seamlessly replace Skip in a way where it's like, if we didn't have Bentancur, my goodness, we'd have missed him. But because of the circumstances he came in, it's like kind of just a continuation of business. Yeah, I mean, he definitely has been a really good signing. He just doesn't, as you say, get the headlines, and he's just I don't know. I kind of had a little bit of hope that he would be slightly more technically impressive, slightly better in his carrying, slightly better in his playing under pressure. Which is not to say he's been bad in those areas. Just I had hopes that he would be exceptional. I still feel he solved the problem of Skip got injured, but he hasn't solved the problem of our general midfield creativity. And maybe that's unfair to like lump all of that on him, because again, he's done a very good rounded midfield job. I just feel there may have been a slightly better way for us to go, and that unfairly on him sort of diminishes him slightly.
I think Nathan's nailed quite a few things there. And also, I just don't think at that moment in time, in that January transfer window, there was the midfielder. I don't think we could have signed a midfielder in that window that would have done better than him. He's almost like, this is a stopgap, but it's a really good stopgap. And I do think we'll see more from him. Certain teams, Man United, for example, I think it was Pogba, was able to bully him and get really after him. And I'm hoping next season that he just becomes a little bit more resilient and we start to see some bit more ball carrying. And he had some nice skills and nice touches here and there, but I really would like to see more. He joined halfway through a season in a really crucial part of the pitch. And he's had a good time.
That is the thing. Yeah, we we skipped getting injured. Like we needed a player who was going to hit the ground running, and he really fulfilled that. And that's kind of the player he's always been, right? Because Juve have changed managers like 12 times or whatever, and every time he's just a mainstay. So,
and that has been relatively unusual at Spurs, that players come in and just hit the ground running straight away with no time to settle in. I mean, we've been really fortunate that our two signings in January have done that to an exceptional degree. I mean, I would say it's not that his ball carrying is not good. I think, you know, that carry I'm thinking of on the edge of his own box was unbelievable. It's like he's got that in his locker. It's just that he's quite a conservative player. He's quite risk averse. But I think that suits Conte, to be honest. I think that's kind of what he's being asked to do. And I think Skip will be much the same. I think Skip's got expansive play in his locker, but probably won't do much of it. Højbjerg, clearly, you know, we've seen some of his assists. He can pick a pass, but broadly speaking, they play safe passes first, and they enable others to be the creative hubs. I mean, I think Eriksen, if he were to sign, would add the ability to do the Conte things and also add X factor passing as well, because he's sort of, you know, a genuinely world-class elite creative passer. I don't think it's an issue necessarily that Højbjerg and Bentancur and Skip aren't. I think it's fine.
I mean, I think if we sign Eriksen and then we go into the season with Saar, Skip, Eriksen, Højbjerg and Bentancur, that's a pretty strong place.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. Yeah. Yeah, I like that a lot. And you know, he was replacing Winks, but he was also replacing Ndombele and Lo Celso, two players who you would say are a little bit more creative, and Conte just didn't fancy either of them, so the sort of more conservative option was the preference. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with how that transfer's gone. Fairly good value for money as well, I'd say. David Gelber says, and this is from way back, so sorry, David. A question for your next show, if you possibly have time for it amid all else that's going on, what do you think of the TIFO display at the ground? One of the naffest things I've seen are the front door-sized banners that get waved at the Emirates whenever Arsenal score. I would hate for us to go down the same road. I can't actually think what the TIFO would have been referring to when David sent the email.
I think it's the one from the North London Derby.
Right, okay.
Dare, dream, do?
Yeah.
Right, I'm with you. What did you make of it?
I mean, I don't know, because I sit in it. So it's like it's one of those that you can't see it. Like back in the day, when you'd see the big, massive sheets come across, the surfer flags, whatever they're called. And you always wonder what goes on, the people who can't see anything. So as part of it, I also feel like a bit of a Wally holding up a carrier bag above my head as an individual. But from watching it unfurl and all the videos from the opposite end of the stadium, it looks pretty good, man. Does it have an impact or GR players up anymore? I don't know. It looks nice, but the flags at Arsenal are awful. The fact that they have people employed just to sit there and wave them. I'm not a huge fan of flag waving at football anyway. I know sometimes we do it for Champions League nights and things like that. I'm not a huge fan of it. The TIFO, I don't mind the TIFO. It's nice. But if you win the match, had we lost that match, that TIFO would have been meme to shit.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a slightly dangerous line to tread, right? I think it's very easy to get it wrong, but I don't think we have so far. Have we done two before? We've done TIFOs before on the big stand. I don't know. They've worked out really nice so far. I feel like it's just a slightly dangerous game. Yeah, again, yeah. If you get hammered, maybe it looks stupid. The thing is that it's a top down thing, right? It's come from the club. The club have decided for us how we're going to support our team, rather than it being an authentic fan thing. And again, so far, everything they've given us to work with has been like worthwhile adopting. There is always the danger that they're going to, you know, play a drum over the speakers at Wembley.
Yeah, I think we're never going to get to a point as a fan base that we're going to mobilise and do something, because it's not how it works in England. It's not how it works, especially with Spurs fans. It's a bit more kind of people turn up, they sing, they get involved, and the atmosphere ebbs and flows with the game. It's not like the Frankfurt fans you saw in the Europa League that just have a constant noise happening. It's just not like that in English football. I don't think we'll ever arrive at a point where Spurs fans get mobilised and do something. You can see how difficult it is from... I know there's Twitter accounts out there creating songs, and all of a sudden we are seeing some original songs pop up and some nice ones. But we will never do a TIFO or a surfer flag or anything else like that as a fan base. So if the club think it's right at certain games, certain times of the season, as long as it's not overused, then I'm all for it. I don't think it's cheesy at all. The flags thing is bad, but everything else I'm kind of on board with. Like Nathan said, I think at the moment they've got it right in terms of checking the temperature of what we want.
Yeah, I was going to make the point that Nathan made, that this is what we're being told to do. It feels like a corporate brand strategy rather than a means of supporting our football club.
Or ad here.
Yeah. It's they're projecting the image that the club want to project. But it just so happens that it's not terrible at this point. That's fine.
The fans are on board with it, though. Had they not been on board with it, they wouldn't have held it up. The club told the fans not to use the Y word, but they continued to use it. So I think had the fans not agreed with it, they would have just protested and not put it up.
Yeah. It's plastic bags, is it?
Yes, plastic bags.
Doesn't seem very environmentally friendly. Are they recycling plastic?
I think it says you can take them home. So I took mine home.
Okay.
Oh yeah, I've got one. Yeah, I've got a dark blue one. Yeah. I remember.
Well, hopefully it's recycled plastic at the very least. Yeah, I mean it's all right. It's fine. I really admire the guys who've set up the Spurs song accounts, and we've retweeted them several times. I think that is absolutely a critical part of developing our way in the new stadium. We need new songs, we need new player songs, and they've done a great job of creating some new player anthems, and that will really, really help the atmosphere. So yeah, hats off to them. I think they've done fantastically so far. So we've touched on this a little bit already, but Sideways Sisyphus says, I'm a huge Hugo fan. I said Sisyphus. Is it Sisyphus? Sideways Sisyphus.
Wait. Yeah, probably right first time.
Sisyphus. I'm a huge Hugo fan. He's a natural shot stopper, and his awareness of positioning has amplified that to an elite level. But an elite distributor, he is not. We're in a difficult transition period this upcoming summer because Hugo will continue to be our number one next year, but his clock is running down. While he remains the starter, it makes sense to bring in an English keeper to be his primary backup, a la Hart, but forgetting Gallini, I never trust a goalkeeper with goal in his name. But with Leeds looking the most likely... So this is ages the question. You can tell how long ago that this was sent in. With Leeds looking the most likely to join Norwich and Watford in relegation, is there a scenario in which we bring in... in which bringing in Melier could happen? I know keepers are hard to evaluate, but he has shown he can handle an avalanche of shots while playing for Leeds in the EPL this year. He's not nearly as savvy as Hugo in his positioning, but he has that natural shot-stopping ability. He's taller, he's younger, so room to grow, and he's a much, much better distributor, in my opinion. I realise that this isn't Football Manager, and Leeds have a big say in this, as does Melier and his view on starting games, but... Yeah, so Leeds didn't go down, so there's that. But if we wanted Melier... we're at a significant enough level now where I think we could go out and sign Melier. And I do like Melier. I like his distribution a lot. I think he's got a lot of personality as a goalkeeper. But the stats aren't that great. They don't love him. We've spoken so many times in the past about how we go about replacing Hugo Lloris, and I feel like that is a predicament that gets trickier and trickier.
I'm not sold on Meslier. There was an interesting beef today on Twitter between Courtois and Mark Goldbridge. I mean, I can't believe we're at a level now where someone like Goldbridge, who's a YouTube persona, is now discussing goalkeeping with Courtois. But they were talking. Goldbridge was going after Courtois for being just a shot stopper and not a sweeper keeper. And now I think Goldbridge got that all wrong, because I don't think sweeper keepers seem to exist anymore. There's now a hybrid of them, of maybe Edison and Alisson are sweeper keepers, but they're more than that now. They're almost playmakers at the back. I think with Conte's system, you don't need a goalkeeper that's incredible with his feet. I think we've seen that with Hugo and how he's done this last few months, that you just need to be competent enough to pass it, and the defence and the midfield will kind of work out the rest of it. We know he's not going to hit these long balls that Edison does, and I'm all right with that, which is why I'm not too keen on Meslier. I think he makes too many mistakes. I don't think his shot stopping is as good as it's thought of, and yeah, I don't want him. I think we're okay to go with a goalkeeper who's perhaps not Edison levels or Alisson levels on the ball. Someone slightly better than Lloris, but I don't think being an expert passer would be top of my list. I would still opt for a bit more of a better goalkeeper in terms of positioning, handling, and the rest of it.
Meslier's so young as well. He's
22, 23.
I want to say 22. I was actually thinking of 21, but he must be 22. Yeah. Goalkeepers tend to peak at what, 25, 26, maybe older.
Yeah.
And then just carry on at that level in some cases for a long, long time. I don't think we're going to replace Hugo well. I don't think we're going to get the right guy first time necessarily. So I think we need to sort of be aware of that and accept that that might happen, that we might end up taking a dip in quality temporarily before we stumble upon our next long-term goalkeeper. Nathan, you wanted Onana for a long time. How are you feeling now?
We didn't get him. I don't know. Like you, I don't feel especially confident in my goalkeeper scouting ability. I didn't do a list of goalkeepers because I feel like I just don't have that knowledge. And also, I feel like the most important sort of metric for goalkeepers is their performance against post shot expected goals. Mm. Actually, look at the placement and maybe velocity of the ball. But I feel like one season, you get so much sway season. One season isn't good. So Meslier, this season, he is in the bottom 5th percentile. Last season, he's in the top 70th percentile. So it's what'd you do with that, right? I think you need three good seasons. And then it's any keeper. So for example, I'm using the free data that's available on FBref, right? Any keeper who's been in a top 5 league team established first choice for 3 seasons is you already kind of know that keeper, right? They're already kind of established. Maybe too expensive for us, maybe not. So I feel like I'm limited not just by my not great understanding of goalkeeping and goalkeeper positioning and that kind of stuff, but also by the data that's available to me too. If I was working as, inside Tottenham or whatever, I would be using a greater range of paid for data, and that would be the first stop is you say, right, here's everyone in the top, 40 percentile of shot stoppers. Now who's good with their feet that we can afford, right? And then you work through your list there, then you get your goalkeeper scouts to watch the players individually. But my position from where I am is, I quite like Onana. Mannion's doing really well in Milan. That's about it. I quite like Sanchez at Brighton. He seems all right. I wonder what his data's been like this season.
I think there are some good goalkeepers in the Premier League, to be honest. I think Sanchez is good. I think Ray is good. I think Meslier is pretty good. I think Nick Pope's had a really good season. Martinez is good.
Nick Pope is an example of a goalkeeper that I would be on board with. He's a solid shot stopper. He makes the saves. It doesn't make too many errors. I like his positioning. Mm. And I think he's okay with his feet. And
I feel like if he were 3 years younger, then we would be signing him now to replace Lloris long term.
How old is he? That's fine. I think we need to get out of the mindset of signing a goalkeeper and them doing 10 years like Lloris has done.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
if you look at like the kind of top performing goalkeepers in Europe this year, Kevin Trapp, who I thought was a chump, had a great season. There's Bono at Sevilla is a good goalkeeper. And these are all guys, Courtois is another example. These are guys...
Jose Sarr is a
perfect example. He balances everything.
Yeah.
I have a real bad feeling about Meslier. He just reminds me of a lot of Italian goalkeepers I've seen come through the ranks who were going to be the next big thing. Matteo Perin, Alex Meret at Napoli, and they just never... hype prospects, but just never got on. I would be okay with us going out and signing a 28, 29, 30-year-old goalkeeper and moving along at three-year periods with goalkeepers rather than going for the 11-year thing like Lloris has done.
I've just looked at Sanchez's numbers and I really want Robert Sanchez. That's my pick. He's my guy now.
He's really good with his feet too.
Friendship with Onana is over now. Now Robert Sanchez is new best friend.
I would like to look at some of the goals Sanchez has conceded.
Okay,
before I make my decision. Yeah, I think you learn more about the goals they let in than the goals they save. Every I can go in the garden, you can kick the ball at me, and I can pull off an incredible save, and you're like, wow. But you want to see the goals they let in.
If you look at all the goals Hugo Lloris has conceded, you go, oh, this guy can't defend his near post from tight angles. I'm not getting this guy in. He's rubbish.
Or across him. He can't save anything that goes across him, which there's so many goals go across him.
And yet we love him. Let's end with this one from Horseshit and Burgers. Love that handle. Do you know if any of the players listen to the pod? If not, which players do you think are most likely to, and what do you think they would make of it? So we don't know that any players listen to the pod, but we do know that one player signed up to the Patreon briefly, which is quite cool. Probably won't say who that was. It would be a breach of... data protection law. Which players do you think are most likely to listen to the podcast, and what do you think they would make of it? Dyer thinks we are soy boys.
Yeah, fair enough. He's right.
He doesn't listen for sure. But I would just like to say, Ben Davies, hey man, thanks for being great.
I think Ben Davies thinks we do a pretty good job, actually.
I think so. It's his kind of...
He's just sort of like, yeah, I think he just thinks, yeah, they're pretty... These guys are all right. They seem to know what they're doing. They produce some pretty viable content.
You just described our podcast as boiled veg and plain chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We're right on the money for Ben Davies.
I don't think Kane listens. I think Charlie Kane probably tunes in every now and then to have a little listen. Maybe he reports to Harry. But maybe they don't even talk to each other anymore. I reckon...
Lucas Moura hate listens. Just like...
he doesn't.
Lucas is just like listening in a... he's probably working out while listening and just getting like audibly shouting, aggressively shouting. And his wife's like, Lucas, is everything okay there? And he's like, yes, everything's fine.
I watched Matt Doherty make noodles in one of those YouTube videos, and he definitely doesn't listen because he's just saying, why don't you just get noodles out of a packet? And I don't think any of our listeners just think about getting noodles out of a packet. They actually have a concept of where they come from. So definitely Matt Doherty doesn't listen.
Do you remember how thrown Matt Doherty was by the question about doors?
Was that in that video?
Was it? Yeah. Oh my God. He looks like everything's a question to him.
Mm.
Like he's just so sort of interested in everything as a new concept that he's never considered before. I think he might find XG a bit of a mind-blowing discussion topic, to be honest.
Just want to say, Horseshit and Burgers, fantastic handle. This is the least favourite question we have ever received. I hate thinking about this. I feel so uncomfortable now I'm thinking about this and I can't stop thinking about it.
What, because you're worried that players do listen?
Yeah, man.
No, just they don't listen. Don't worry about it. Like,
no, they don't listen.
They don't listen. They don't care. It's their job. It's not their passion.
Clock off, mate. If you're listening, go play some golf, you fucking weirdo.
Yeah. Like,
they have people that listen for them, I'm sure of it. Because they... you have media monitoring, right? So I used to work at an organization, and I'm sure every big organization does this, but they have a machine out there that listens for their name being mentioned. And I'm sure if we put out a tweet that says Ben Davies, there's an algorithm out there that goes, oh, Ben Davies, and then they will clip up this part of the media and then present it to his people and say, Anthony Lombardi thinks Ben Davies is probably the greatest left-sided centre-back playing football at the moment. And that will arrive at his person and they'll go, holy shit, these guys are really talking positive of you. And then they put together this nice dashboard about swings and impressions and all that, and like all that kind of shit. So there are people who are connected to these players listening for sure.
I love that. The idea that as Ben Davies is walking from the canteen to the training pitch, his personal assistant is running after him with like a clipboard full of charts. Your numbers are trending up this week, Ben.
Yeah.
Bardi from The Extra Inch gave you a mention and that's led to 47 engagements and 39 of them have been positive.
Since you changed your haircut by a millimetre, you've gone up 5% in positive engagements. Yeah.
And then they put together a word cloud and they show Ben Davies in the middle and floating around it is boiled chicken and vegetables. And then they do the same for Højbjerg and they're getting this mixed messages of Højbjerg and cement.
He's like, what is cement? What is cement mixer?
No, but contrastingly, there is a cement company out there doing media monitoring going, why do we keep getting mentioned in relation to a Tottenham player? So if someone invents a cement mixer and calls it Pierre, then you know why, you know where that's happened. It's all interconnected, man.
Beautiful, beautiful. Nathan, honestly, don't worry. It's fine. None of them listen. It's absolutely fine.
They. I know that footballers check their like Twitter mentions way, way more than they should because they should never.
And they should definitely never listen to this podcast because we are really like overly analytical. We analyse things to the nth degree. This would not be good for their mental health to listen to.
I mean, it's better than listening to the fighting cock and figuring out and some of the would you rather questions that come there. At least we're talking about would you rather pull it back or cross it in. They're talking about all kinds of different ones.
Would you rather pull it out?
Exactly.
And on that note, so once again, you can buy the fanzine of our partners. I'm so sorry to them for mentioning this right now. 1882fanzine.com. That's 1882fanzine.com. And for updates on future issues of their fanzine, you can follow them. 1882 on Twitter at 1882fanzine, 1882fanzine.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.